that one incident, news spread fast, even back then in 1934. The whole 7.5 million strong strike come to an end. And there was a deal that he would hire everybody back if they would never mention it again.
What? Never heard of that.
Well, all these people wrote to Roosevelt thinking he was a friend of the common man. He didn't give a rip about the South other than to come to Warm Springs, Georgia with his mistress and to sit in the springs because of his polio. He spoke a while. Because he was also friends with all the New York owners, the ones that really money people behind these cotton mills. So some people got put out in the street, and there was one little old gal. She got shot with a .22. She wasn't but 16 years old. She got shot. They put her, wrapped her up, told her to be to work on her shift. And nobody talked about it until Judith Heflin started making this movie, and some of the people came out and started talking about it. I'll let the repeater drop here for a second. The reason I was watching it at this little tiny theater, 65 seats, with the producer and the director and some of the characters from the film, was because even 50-some, almost 60 years later, Henry Coffin of South Carolina Educational Television, the president, refused to air it. He was, feelings are still strong, and we don't want to incite nothing. Translation, murder was committed, and some of these characters are still alive. So out of 50 states, South Carolina was the only one that refused to air it. Even North Carolina played it. But we had to go see it in a little dinky theater to get an idea of what it was.
I didn't even know it had happened. One of the dark stories of the South, I guess. That good old boy system runs deep and strong. I've learned over time around here that word of mouth goes a long, long ways. Everybody knows everybody around here in some way or other. They're all connected, and you do something big enough and all that draws the attention of one person, everybody knows it. Everybody. Things get around big time, and when you make the wrong person mad, bad things happen, and everyone turns a blind eye.
Well, the mill system had its positives. You had a lot of folks that were going to starve to death. They couldn't make a living in Appalachia farming anymore. So the mills offered them a job, a house, an education, in many cases medical care, even though it was mostly vaccinations and patch-ups so you'd go back to work as quick as you could. They did everything. They even built the churches. They were like kings. And the trick was, it was not like a communist or totalitarian. It was like the serf system with the king. And so many of these people, they don't fight with you today, even down here. Them people were like little gods. They literally worship Miss So-and-so or Mr. So-and-so. And they were the law and order. You didn't want to act up at home. If your kid acted up at home or school, all the school teacher had to do was go to what they called a second hand. And some people might correct me and it's listening in the background, but the second hand was like a supervisor. If that couldn't fix it, they'd go to mill owner. Let me tell you something, your kid behaved in school, or you got fired, put out of your house, and had a black mark on your record, so it's going to get hard, tough to get hired somewhere else.
Yep, that's how it was, too. Some of them old mill towns are still around like that. There's a whole bunch of them, but this whole area was nothing but textile industry, especially post-Civil War. It really, really, really kicked in like that. Agriculture got really difficult. Didn't turn a profit anymore. So people turned to textiles and also moonshining, because corn was worthless, but you could turn corn into moonshine, and then it was worth something again. Unfortunately, that happened during Prohibition times, which caused issues with the government, unless you were big enough and strong enough and had enough money to keep them away, or knew the right people to make investigators disappear. There's stories about the Glassy Mountain area for sure because of that. Different people who disappeared, got too close and knew too much. But that's the way things were, and it wasn't very long ago. Now the mill towns are kind of run down looking. But back in the day, it was big time like that.
Roger that, but what happened is all these towns, you got Clinton with the Baileys, you got you had a whole bunch of the J.P. Stevens. It depends on which plant you work for. J.P. Stevens, you could get a great manager, or you could get a rotten you-know-what. Arlington was one of the biggest ones. Depends on who you were working for and at which mill. And then, but you mentioned Roger Milliken. He was in trouble with the government all the time. But he literally, and I don't mean this sacrilegiously, to a lot of his workers, he walked on water. So Roger Milliken was revered. And when he spoke, everybody listened. But the thing was, when the mills started to close, and basically the civil rights movement, not the unions, started to put an end on that, and these workers said, hey, we can go somewhere else and pay, you know, Singapore or China or it wasn't Vietnam because of the war. We can go somewhere else and pay Guatemala and pay them nothing to make our clothes and to make our cloth. And the towns like Clinton, oh, they're moving out. Okay, well, they'll be back, or there'll be another mill, and they just didn't realize the mill whistle blew for the last time. And that was it.
All shut down. And a lot of the people who used to work in the mills, there is a tail end of them that's in their late 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s, as far as ages go. At least late 60s, most of them in their 70s, 80s, and 90s now. Those people grew up working in the mill, and they worked in the mill all their lives, retired from the mill and all that. They still remember the way things were, but that went away. And it, in a way, it's kind of sad because of that's basically where our middle class came from, and it's pretty much gone away with now, and it's very difficult to get a decent job and get your life off the ground. But in another way, I almost feel some sort of good way about it because people were born and they already knew when they were kids they'd work at the mill. So they spent their whole life knowing that they'd go work for the mill, and they spent their whole life in the mill. And that's all there was. You lived your life and you lived it for the mill, basically. And that's it, kind of like a bee working in the beehive. A honeybee will always be a honeybee. It's just going to work its butt off, making honey, and then die. And these people spent their lives for the mill. Everything in their life came from the mill. So that much I kind of feel bad about, that it happened. But, hey, at least I guess they had a good life, in a way.
They were taken care of, and you didn't have to think a whole lot. Oh, they weren't all dumb people. The whole idea of they were smart people. That's what you had. And if you played, you know, the system, you knew what you had to do. Your life was planned. Your death was planned. Over in Honeypath, The funeral home was run by the mill, and so was the florist that provides your flowers for your new kid, christening, for your wedding, and your funeral. And, you know, you just didn't need to ask too many questions. And, yeah, there were crooks. I don't think it was as bad in some mills, but I know my grandfather, he went to in the 30s down to Gaffney, and he stayed down there about a month because things were kind of slowing down at Clinchfield in Marion, North Carolina. So he went down there to Gaffney, and he said, kind of, he didn't fit in. So he decided after 6 weeks he came back, and his job was waiting for him, you know. But everything revolved around the mill whistle. They kind of told you who to vote for, and they frowned on drinking and carrying on like that. And Lord help you if the mill security guards caught you speeding or drinking even on your time off. Because you did not, you know, they had more respect than the legal law by far.
Interesting. Well, part of the problem with drunkenness is that it breeds poverty. So from that aspect, I can kind of get it. That whole way of living, once you start down a path of consuming excessive alcohol, it kind of messes your whole life up. You become stupid, you become sick, you become locked into that whole mentality of going to get your next fix, willing to spend the last penny out of your pocket for alcohol. I can kind of see that. I also think people should have free choice, but I don't think that an addiction is a good idea.
It is what actually got rid of the bootleg system around by 1970 for sure, but also in the late 60s. When you saw dry counties where you couldn't buy a beer, it had nothing. Well, the churches might rail about it to keep it illegal. And I'm going to say something, but preachers admitted it. The bootleggers paid for a lot in that church, and having legal booze at the store was not in their interest. And I'll confess, I had an uncle, a great uncle, that hauled moonshine. He had the car, and I'm going to let it drop for a second here. R.I.D. He had about a 1,000-gallon tank in that old Hudson Hornet. And Hudson Hornet, we see it in the cars movie and all the little... But it had a flat... It had a dip-down floor in it. It was the first with a recessed floor. Everybody takes that for granted, that you step in and down into a car. But cars up until the Hudson Hornet had a flat floor. Well, what you did... We used that recession. You took out your seats, that recessed area, and you made a tank, a cover over it, and that's where you stored your whiskey. So then you would bolt the seats back down to the top of the tank, put the rails and all. Somebody stopping you, they weren't used to that. They didn't know, you know, that's a nice looking car from the outside. You could haul 1,000 gallons, plus it had a weight balance if you had that sucker full. So, Bill made a few runs from usually around Knoxville down to Tryon. And he made really good money. And everybody said, Bill, you ought not be doing that. That's dangerous and it's against the Lord's will. But none of them turned down that $100 bill that Bill left on the table.
KJ4WZM, and believe it or not, I will not name any names here, but believe it or not, I know there are hams out there, because I've talked to them before, that also used to participate in the moonshining running stuff, and it paid pretty good. One of them got their stuff taken away. And he never got it back either. But I've heard some, I shouldn't advocate for it, but I've heard some pretty cool stories. how exciting it was, and having the having those specially made vehicles for all those kind of adventures and stuff like that. Kind of neat. Not something I would do, but I like to hear the stories on it. And I hope that, I know one guy in particular, I hope he ain't listening to me discuss this, because I know he knows it. He'd recognize this conversation for sure. I'm not going to go any further, but yeah, that's kind of neat. I think that's neat. It's not something I do, but hey, back then, I'm not saying that if I was from back then that I wouldn't have done it. That's neat.
Is liquor, but to the people of Appalachia and some in the low country of South Carolina, particularly in Georgia, it was a matter of rights. My family made liquor when it came over from the old country. They never paid tax on it, and it was about the tax and a fight between the big distilleries and breweries. People here wanted to make their own. They weren't, didn't want to pay some, they didn't want to pay some Yankee company or Canadian company for their booze. They could make their own. And so it was a struggle. Especially, it was kind of like a way to get back at Uncle Sam. So when you got cut corners, when it got bad was when you had some of these bigger, crooked groups, like you see in the Buford Pusser Walking Tall movies. They started doing all kind of shortcuts. Instead of using copper tubing, they used a radiator out of a Ford or a Cadillac. Well, that had lead in it and antifreeze deposits. That poison. That would be all kind of, they wouldn't keep the mash clean. They did all kind of shortcuts, and so that probably turned more people off to moonshine, showing them sickening videos, than turned them to legalized booze. But I remember my brother, there always was one guy in the class. They had science fairs back then, and you win some little prize. There wasn't no money, but you get a ribbon. One clown would always bring him in a custom-made water purifier. And he would go to meticulous efforts to make the prettiest water purifier you ever seen. And it was nothing more than a steal. And these were high school kids.
Water purifier, yeah, that's exactly what that is. Mm-hmm, absolutely. By the way, before you even think it, moonshining is not dead and gone. It just really died back. It's not what it was before, and now it's pretty much nothing short of a hobby. People are not making a living off of it anymore. That ain't happening. But the crowd that still does it, it's more... I don't know, it's more of a throwback and an admiration for their ancestry, for the people who did it, for their a statement about their own personal liberties and freedoms, the way that they see them, and stuff like that. It's a throwback to the good old times in a form of art and a sense of pride, a statement about the past. And that's most of what it is now. It's not big like it was. It just exists. Barely exists. And they're not turning out the volumes now that they used to back in the day either.
The 55 gallons or 50 gallons a year you could make. I can't imagine making that many fruitcakes, although that's primarily rum. I couldn't imagine 50 gallons. Although there was a time I probably drank a couple hundred gallons of beer a year, but that's a whole nother beverage there. And it's kind of like, I'm not putting on your generation, but say going back about 40 years in the past, we never had microbreweries. You bought Budweiser or Slitz, which, believe it or not, actually used to be a good beer, I was told, or Miller. That's what you bought. And if you wanted an import, well, that was a Heineken, or a Beck's, particularly the dark beer. That was our dark beer. We didn't even have Guinness. We didn't have Sapporo. And I remember going to a bar called the Second Level. And me and a friend were bound and determined we were going to try every beer they had. Wasn't going to happen, because they had 60. I think we stopped at the Sapporo because it had a special stainless steel can. Now, this is almost the late 70s. That would tell you when it was the right temperature to serve. It was a temperature-sensitive can. And we got to Sapporo. I think the fact that the Foster's, the big oil can, was in the way, that we were done after that. But anyway, we got home all right. And this may be an interesting note to you. I'm going to let it drop for a second. KD4SRR. Beer in the car was not a crime up until the mid-80s in South Carolina.
That's crazy. That's not that far before I was born. I was born in the mid-90s. That wasn't much ahead of my time there.
If there's anybody who wants to join us and give us their experience of riding around with a keg of beer in the car, with the hose between the seats, especially at Myrtle Beach, please jump in. KD4SRR. Yeah, it was not illegal to have a beer, open beer in your car. But Lord help you if you had a gin and tonic. They would turn you upside down and shake your pockets out before they beat you and threw you into jail. And put your picture on the front page of the newspaper. But beer, because it was 3.2 alcohol, a lot of them are more than that, but 3.2, it wasn't considered enough alcohol. Now, if you got really drunk and ran through somebody's house with your car, they just get you for drunk driving. But basically, they knew you were buzzed. But if you could keep it on your side of the road, drive 55, nobody bothered you.
Now you have a empty can in the back seat of your car, and they're ready to put you under the jail for open container, regardless of how sober you are. A 0.00, and they're still going to get you for it.
I'll tell you a story. What they were looking for back there was a single pot seed. Oh, that made you the son of Satan if you had a pot seed in your carpet. Beer, heck, soldiers drink beer. It's an American thing. Good for you. Just keep it in the right-hand lane, 55 miles an hour.
Did that become illegal? Because back in the 1800s, hemp was a farming staple.
Randolph Hearst decided that hemp paper was was competition. That's what it was about. He wanted to make pulp newspaper, and I mean the Bill of Rights and the Constitution is on hemp paper. It was, you know, it competed with hemp. So Randolph Hearst started with going after musicians for smoking dope and all that stuff. They finally banned it in 1948. Because you can still, but, you know, a lot of people, they would have smoked dope. Except musicians, Louis Armstrong, a couple of them, you know, they'd light up a J. But, and they, you know, if you want to see a hilarious movie, see Reefer Madness. That was sponsored by Randolph Hearst, and that's just funny as all get out.
I have to look into that sometime. That whole I'm not one that consumes those type of substances. I really ever consume alcohol, even not something that I'm personally super into. But I do think that people should have their own freedom to choose as they're going to do. But I just don't understand why they had to make hemp so illegal in why they've even proceeded to this day. It's no longer about the whole paper thing and textile and all that. They're just pitching a fit about it to pitch a fit about it. Oh, it's a drug. Yeah, well, cigarettes kill a lot more people every year than that does. Way more. Way, way, way more. Alcohol and cigarettes are far more deadly than that plant.
Well, here's the thing about hemp. It was too easy to grow, and it was too easy to hide the wacky weed amongst it. You couldn't go through there and in a field, but anybody could grow it. So it was a tax thing, and you're absolutely right. And the tobacco companies, I mean, they couldn't control it. Let's be, you know, R.J. Reynolds and all them other companies. So they helped push cigarettes. I mean, they had the cigarette girls in the bars, you know, and they'd get some little cutie and put her little tray around her neck, you know, with a little strap, and she'd give out cigarettes. They had candy cigarettes for the kids. Little, I forgot what they were. They weren't licorice. They were some little sweet thing in the shape of a cigarette. All the GIs smoked. My brother remembers when he had to go in 66, got drafted. First thing they took him over to was the PX and showed him the cigarette stand. But let me tell you why they really, but here's the thing with the cigarette companies. They largely donated to conservatives, arch conservatives, like Strom Thurmond, like Jesse Helms up in North Carolina, like Lester Maddox over in Georgia, or George Wallace in Alabama. There was a whole lot of fixtures that tobacco controlled, just like the cotton mills. But you made a lot better money working for R.J. Reynolds than you did at any cotton mill. That was considered, even though it was nasty and you could taste that stuff every day. I remember going through Winston-Salem, North Carolina, and man, ugly town. No offense to anybody that's got kinfolk living there. Still an ugly town today, at my standpoint. But you could taste it when you got the tobacco leaves when you got on the edge of town. And then for the farmers, you got to look over at the PD. There ain't much there. Tomatoes didn't grow, corn didn't grow. But you could make 3, 5, 10 times the money off of 2 acres of leaf tobacco than you could off 100 acres of cotton or soybeans or peas.
Lucrative, so that's what they pushed. And now it's far more lucrative to big pharma. Look at KJ4WZM. Look at how much money has been made in the medical industry due to tobacco use and the chemicals they've put into it.
But tobacco is still the best thing for a bee sting. It sounds kind of nasty, but you take a cigarette, you unroll it, or you take pipe of tobacco, but it's easier with a cigarette. And you may have seen this done. You get hit with a yellow jacket. Man, that hurts. Several of them. You get you a little poultice, mix you some water with that old nasty leaves, and put that on them bee stings, hornet stings, it'll draw that poison right out and stop the itch.
That pouch of dip with tape over it works great too. Any variety of that type stuff. Been there, done that.
About the bars in the 70s. I hated doing it, especially if you were going to college and still living at home. Mom knew where you'd been. Because you'd walk into a bar and all of them were smoking places. And my gosh, you'd open the door and you'd think, where's the fire department? You could literally write your initials if you were to just draw in the air. You could do your initials in the smoke. It was that thick. And, of course, you went home smelling like that. And knock on wood, I haven't developed any secondary stuff, but I knew some bartenders that have. But it was just nasty. And all college girls, all of 1970s women, they wanted to smoke dope, they wanted to smoke cigarettes, they thought that was cool. And a lot of them started when they were 13, 14 years old. Oh, I'm cool. And, of course, cigarettes were, you buy them for 50 cents a pack. And that was another business that a lot of people did. Load up, like, your semi-truck and take them to New York. Buy the cigarettes cheap down here and try to get through the New York authorities. But you could get into all kind of federal trouble along the way. Because way back yonder, I mean, it was a couple of dollars, which is cheap for now. But it was $2 for a pack of cigarettes when you can buy them for a quarter down here. A lot of people took the risk.
You can just, you can barely take, back then you could have taken a few packs with you and made your gas money back for going there and back for just the amount you could hide in a car, never mind taking a truck.
But I, you know, looked at it as, hey, you know, them Yankees up there, you know, they want to control everything, you know, ain't gonna hurt you. Better than drinking. And they're right in that standpoint, to an extent. I've never known anyone except an old comedian named Ernie Kovacs that tobacco killed him behind the wheel, but that was because he dropped a cigar in his lap while up near the, in the hills of, so they say, in the hills of above Hollywood, and drove off the road. So he was a great, that's somebody to look into. He's fascinating. I never thought he was funny. Even looking back, he was bizarre. But he was a pioneer, Ernie Kovacs. And some people say they think that was more of a hit job, that he didn't really do that. But his wife was kind of a singer, kind of a lounge singer, you know, pretty glamorous. Her name was Edie Adams. And 9 years after his death, Tipperillo Cigars came out with a miniature cigar. And she was the glamour spokesperson. And you look at old commercials, you go on YouTube, and the whole thing, would a gentleman offer a lady a Tipperillo? Being that it was a cigar, but it was a mini cigar. And then, after a couple, 3 years, we got on the anti-tobacco kit, kick, and the Marlboro Man disappeared. And yeah, eventually wound up with no Winston Cup in NASCAR. So now it's Nextel or whoever, you know. Different one almost every year. But Winston Cup, man. And I remember getting some of the merchandise. Here, I didn't even smoke. I got some nice coolers and jackets and, oh, man. And the Marlboro Man was, like, considered the hottest dude, you know, on TV. Women just, ooh, the Marlboro Man.
It's really funny how times have changed like that. It really is, I don't know, it's like a, it's like looking back at a roadmap now, going through history and tracing that stuff back. It's kind of fascinating in a way. It's crazy how and why times have changed, and there's a lot of that that has just pretty much been forgotten and not talked about, especially here recently with all the things going on. And it really is neat to look back and figure out how did we go from point A to point B and the steps that got us there. And these are some big ones that have really changed the country in a big way, and it came from regions like we live in now, the textile industry, the tobacco industry, the revolting against the whole prohibition and the moonshine that was made and all that kind of stuff. It really, really, really had a huge impact on life as we see it now. Racing itself came out of running shine. And now you see NASCAR everywhere and everything that goes on with that. But a lot of the racing type stuff was due to shiners running from cops and trying to build up better running cars and stuff like that. And it's kind of neat how it's gone from point A to point B over time.
Uncle got into early racing as a non-moonshiner. And non-moonshine runner. Pete just liked fast cars. And Pete always came in last. Man, them ex-moonshiner boys, they run all over him. So he kind of hung in the back and also ran. And interesting enough, the original Bill France Sr. liked Pete, because Pete was a car salesman. And, you know, he was one of the kind of cats that gets you laughing and all that stuff. And then he could sell you a nickel worth of, you know what, to anybody if he had a wheelbarrow load. Well, Bill France liked Pete. And he kind of figured, since he was at the back of the pack, they're going to have to get some rules. And Pete had the best view of anybody and what was going on. So my Uncle Pete Keller, his real name was Joseph T., but they called him Pete. And I, to this day, don't know why they called him Pete. I got the nickname, but he became NASCAR. And he wrote, with the help of some of the other guys, the very first rule book. Now, this was in the 50s into the mid-60s. And so all the names, I mean, Lee Petty put Richard in the car, and you had the first Earnhardt. And but Fred Lorenzo, Tiny Lund, who was not tiny, he was 300 some pounds, and was the state champion for decades, caught the largest striper in Lake Moultrie or Lake Marion for up until the 90s or maybe the 2000s. He caught a 50-some pounder. But that was the beginning. Now, when Bill France Jr. came along, he realized the power of TV and things were going to have to change. And see, these old boys, they didn't know how to talk. They didn't want to talk. In TV, you got to have a personality, kind of like wrestling. So Pete and all the old stuff had to go. And they started getting the billions of money from ABC and CBS to start airing Daytona. But, yeah, that's how Pete started. But, man, them characters. And they were pretty polite old boys, but you want to go out there and play rough, they will put you into the stands. Kind of like Cal Yarborough, if you ever see a film from, I think it was 1966. They put him airborne over the fence at Darlington. That was the real heat warning. There, I turned the fan around on. I might have put me an ice pack on this thing. Anyway, they put him over the wall, and everybody went running. Oh, man, they done killed Cale. No, Cale was all right. He was able to drive the car back. He warped the frame or something. But now, these were real stock cars. They had started putting some slicks on them. Goodyear and Firestone and Hoosier tires started making tires for them. But they were pretty much a roll cage and a helmet. And a shoulder belt. So, it got to be about 1970. Then, they started, still had stock cars. The trick was the manufacturers had to make, and somebody please correct me on that, I think they had to make 500 of whatever they came out with to call it still a stock. And Petty had the Superbird. It had the wing and the sleek front and all that stuff and the Hemi. And you can run what you brung, and then they started saying, it's getting too fast. They had built Talladega, and my gosh, them guys were getting up to Indy speeds. And they didn't have the tires or the human reaction to drive that fast. So they started putting restrictors on them. But anyway, the racing you got today with the France grandchildren, I'm really surprised it's still around, given their preponderance to know how to spend money but not make money.
The times really, 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 really have changed as far as that goes. And all the different rules and regulations now they have to try to, quote, keep things fair, end quote, and keep things safer. It's not even remotely close to what it was back then, but it sure has come a long way. And I think they have a lot fewer fatalities because of that, but it kind of is sad too that you don't get to go back to basically where it came from and try things now against actual stock cars, because these aren't even remotely close to anything stock. KJ4WZM. I'm going to have to hop off of here really, really soon because I'm starting to nod off. I'm tired a little bit, and I've been up since about 5:30, so a.m., not p.m. So I'm closing in on 20 hours real quick, so I'll have to knock off of here real quick before I start falling asleep on the radio. You'll be talking to Empty Space here in just a second, so... I'll have to holler at you later on down the log, man, for sure. But it's been really good talking to you, and I hope to talk to you next time I hear you on the radio. I'll be around every now and then. I call the net on Friday nights and the first Sunday of every month if you ever want to come check in with me. KJ4WZM.
KJ4SR, well, man, it was very polite of you to let me bend your ears around twice and backwards three or four times. As you can tell, I can wear somebody out, and I apologize to the rest of the net. Some people say I can talk without breathing, but that's I kind of learned that from Pete. I picked it up from him. But anyway, I do appreciate it. Many interesting stuff about the cycling and, you know, your beard getting and all that stuff. You know, that's just fascinating stuff. And, you know, I try to be generational, but that's a rare thing. And maybe it's because of ham radio. Who knows? It's teaching us conversation again. Now, I probably ran my mouth more than I allowed you. That's typical of me. But I did enjoy the interchange here, and I hope that everybody maybe picked up something out in the background. I listen to these talks on the Mount Mitchell repeater. I can listen to them guys. There's usually three or four of them gets on there. Talk to 1 o'clock in the morning. In fact, I'll probably head up that way here in a little bit. But thanks again for just taking the time. It didn't cost us no money, did it? We didn't get out. We're not risking no drunk unless they come filing through the house. We're not worried about drunk drivers or nothing. But I think this hobby here is to get serious. It's starting to teach people how to do a conversation again, and which is a lost art. And no matter the technology, it's still like them three cats that got together and came up with the acronym HAM. From their last names back in, I think, 1908 at Yale or Harvard. It's what it's about, and I appreciate the privilege of speaking with you tonight. So, anyway, enough of me. This is Robert down in the wild kingdom of Joanna, KD4SRR, we'll say 73s. Enjoy tomorrow at the field day if you go. And we'll hope to talk to you again soon. KD4SRR, we're clear.
4SRR, KJ4WZM. Good talking to you, Robert, and we'll definitely holler at you later on down the log. I definitely enjoy a good conversation, and this has been a good one. Usually it's like pulling teeth to get people to stay around and talk to me on the RagTube portion of the net. The net's been closed now. I closed it just after 10, so it's been... little over 2 hours since I closed it. But it's difficult for me to find people to hang around for comments. Harry KC4EZN, he normally hangs around for comments for me. Every once in a while, I'll get someone else. K4OIM, well, he had major surgery done on his mouth. They took more than half his mouth out. And, he was one of my regulars until that happened, but now he doesn't hang around for comments much because it's difficult for him to talk. He's come a long ways, too. I don't know if you've been following the net a whole lot or not, but he was almost completely unintelligible when he first started talking again. I'd say he's about 85 to 90% back to how he used to sound. He'll never get it all back. He'll get close. I think he'll probably even get closer to what he is now. But because of how much they took out of his mouth, like I think he's missing most of his tongue now, as well as a lot of other stuff they took out. But he's Anyway, all that to say this, he was one of my regulars as well, but now he doesn't really hang around for comments anymore, and it's difficult to find people to hang around and talk. There's another ham, Larry, KK4JBQ, every once in a while, once in a blue moon, maybe once or twice a year, I'll get him to hang around for comments. There's some other hams that he normally talks to more frequently. And I don't know if it's an age thing or whatever. I'm not in his age group. He tends to talk to people who are in his age group. Maybe it's because he feels like he shares more common ground with them. I'm not sure. But I'm not in his age group, and that might be have something to do with it. But I do like listening to all of his stories when he talks to other guys on the net. I wish he'd hang around for comments on mine, but he doesn't. So, anyways, all that to say this. Thanks for hanging around for comments. See you later on down the log. Don't be a stranger. KB4SIR, KJ4WZM, 73C, Robert, and you have a great night.
Same to you now, and take care of yourself. Be careful out there, that bicycle ride. And I'm glad you were able to look up John McSwain there. Maybe I get to meet him one day. And maybe, who knows, I might get me one of them bicycle, maybe one of them lay-down deals with a steering wheel on it. You'll see me tooling around with the fishing pole flag on the back. Take care, dude. Get some rest. And we hope to talk to you again soon. This is KD4SRR cleared. But I ain't ready to go to bed yet, so if anybody else wants to yak, I'm ready, I think. Till then, KD4SRR cleared.
KJ4WZM clear. Good night.
This is KD4SRR. I'm going to be clearing the repeater here and headed up to Mount Mitchell at 5190. Anybody want to follow me or chase me, that's where I'm headed. KD4SRR clear.